Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. I'm having a constitutional. And I've been letting my mind jump around. Just on my way down to the canal. And it's kind of ranging over a whole lot of different things at the moment. The current affairs picture is one of just great confusion from what I can see at the moment, both in terms of events and also in underlying potential developments, and again on all kinds of fronts, cultural fronts, political fronts, psychological fronts, you know, not forgetting the economy. It's one of the folly of old men, I think, is a propensity towards big picture storytelling. And I think mea culpa, I'm guilty of that. And I suppose it's a lifetime of experience that produces that behaviour in older people, especially vis-a-vis their younger contemporaries. And it is to pretend to some bigger vision on the basis of having lived what would be considered a good length of time. Now, obviously, it's a bit of a funny equation, because a wealth of experience doesn't mean very much if the experience was insignificant. It doesn't mean very much if the experience wasn't registered with any sensitivity. It doesn't mean very much if there haven't been attempts to understand and interpret that experience. And doesn't mean very much if some clarity hasn't been gained about the methods of interpretation themselves, and of memory itself, and of history itself. So it is a folly on the part of the old. So what's jumping out at me at the moment is a particularly noisy piece of froth. Is the, I suppose you might call it the alt left, the alt right debate, just putting it very crudely. And there's like a huge propaganda war going on in the Western world along the lines of almost 1930s Germany left-right conflict, you know, the running battles in the streets between the communists and the fascists and so forth. And of course, you know, there have been events, particularly the Charlottesville event, which resulted in a licensed Unite the Right rally, ostensibly to protest the impending removal of a statue of General Robert E. Lee, who was the general of the Confederates, or a Confederate general of some renown and military skill. And of course, the inevitable counter-protest, and the police did in fact officially call off the rally in a park in Charlottesville. Anyway, there was a lot of skirmishing and fighting, and somebody was killed by a young man driving his car into a crowd of counter-protesters, what you might call leftists, and sometimes they're called Antifa, you know, anti-fascists. Of course, there have always, whilst there's been fascism, there's always been anti-fascism, and whilst there is hate-based politics, there will be violence and counter movements that are prepared will feel that it's necessary to take on violence. There's been a lot of brouhaha as well, subsequent to the death of a young woman in Charlottesville, having been run over by a car. And the guy was a rightist who drove it into. He was only 20 years old. And a lot of people were injured. So we had the case of a contested far right gathering, march, or rally over a symbolic issue, resulting in clashes with anti-fascists or leftists or alt-lefts, and whatever you want to call them. You see the labels jumping around all over the place. Anyway, the thing results in somebody being killed. It's serious. And President Trump didn't handle it well, and has been opened up to, well, it's certainly opened up a debate around some very fundamental things. The place of violence in politics being one, the nature of left and right being another, whether there is a moral equivalence between the left and the right, or the far left and the far right, or fascism and anti-fascism, and also what would it take to be able to decide moral equivalence, or the lack of moral equivalence, what is moral equivalence, and so on. And of course, obviously, issues around free speech, issues around propaganda, issues around the significance of history, and so on and so on and so on. And at stake in all of this, of course, is the shape that the world will take in the future as it emerges out of the current turbulence into something a little bit more peaceful and sustainable. So big stuff, and but you wouldn't think it, walking around the byways of sunny Wolverhampton. It all seems very peaceful, even though that's the police looking for cannabis plantations or something like that. Anyway, big picture, the old man's voice, big picture storytelling. Well, I see this as part of something I've alluded to throughout these podcasts. Whenever that I've kind of undertaken a current affairs issue, I've always mentioned that it seems to me that as though, you know, the predominant forces in the world and the unfolding of history at the moment are fragmental forces, rather than centrifugal forces pulling back together or giving shape and a little bit of sustainability. It's all part of the turbulence which is the universe. So, but we're human beings. And we have to do stuff about stuff. That's something we've been landed with through having brains that can remember, I've got storage capacity for memory and pattern recognition ability for enabling predictions on the basis of memory, or enabling survival favourable developments to take place. And in past podcasts I've not really elucidated the fragmentary forces, other than to claim that they are material forces, that we're not seeing some sort of unfolding of occult magic or something. That it could be explained in terms of current reasonable truth claims about the world, about the universe. To some extent, I mean, I'm saying that there's in these, when you once you entertain the old man's voice of thinking at scale, you automatically become a hermeneut. You know, there's no way out of that. But nevertheless, facts can be decisive, and propositions are an important element in the hermeneutics and the rules of dealing with propositions. But we also have other stuff going on: evaluation, philosophical imagination, legislation. Because our wills to power as philosophers are always involved, whether we know it or not, even if you're Schopenhauer. And there's some part of us, we unruly old men, which willy-nilly will attempt to exert will to power. And for a philosopher, that means to legislate. And I am alluding here to Nietzsche's distinction between an underlibero and a philosopher proper. I think he counts himself a philosopher proper, and people like Kant and Hegel as underliberers, because they do the donkey work of making the field transparent with their kind of laboring. But it then comes to the philosopher proper, according to Nietzsche, to legislate on the basis of these stepping stones, or these foundations. So what is the nature of these fragmentary forces? Because all I've managed to say thus far is that they are material change of cause and effect and so on. Well, in the case of the out-left, out-right ideological struggle, now there's an enormous amount of interpretation of what all this means going on all over social media, all over some of the kind of darker corners of the internet, in the mainstream media, on the TV and so on. I mean, one view is that the whole thing's a kind of a set-up, a divide and rule set-up. Or a kind of a set-up to give the government in the US an excuse to declare martial law and then carry on with the corporatist rip-off. And the preparation for end times. There's an interpretation which says that the whole kerfuffle is that, you know, it's a bit of a kerfuffle in a corner, and the internet is just keyboard warriors sitting in their mum's basement wearing their greasy underpants trolling each other, and that is the significance of the discourse. Of course, when the President of the United States, who is also the Commander-in-Chief of the world's biggest ever military machine, wades in, and it's pretty obvious that he's on whose side he's on, you know. And then of course the story goes round that he's scared because his base in the white working class, who've been attracted to the right as they were in the 30s, form his base in the polls, and if he's going to get a second term, or even if he's just not going to get impeached, he needs to keep these people on side. So he issues ambiguous statements indicating that in his mind there's some sort of moral equivalence between the left and the right, that it's a pure binary. And in fact everybody involved is throwing binaries at the hermeneutic task of trying to figure what this is about. And there's more than just out-left, out-right. You know, there are subtle distinctions within the camps. And then there's out-right, new-right, and so on. Now, both of these sides, of course, have got their intellectual prize fighters as well. I mean, in the case of the out-right, one of the guys whose name escapes me. Not very good with names. This is another one of the joys of old age. Not so good with names, but one of the key figures in the circus. Somebody who's able to attract a fair bit of attention, claims that the outright was memed into existence just by slapping memes all over the social media in a kind of concerted way, but with a fair bit of skill. And remember that we've got artificial intelligence algorithms working on the data. This data can be interrogated by artificial intelligence algorithms, learning algorithms and so forth, for clues as how to manipulate public opinion or certain sections of public opinion. And there's a firm called Cambridge Analytica, which is reputed to have done this for Donald Trump himself, using this science of manipulation, which of course has been around since ever, you know, but received quite a boost by Bernays in the, whenever it was, 1920. And then the whole phenomenon of Mad Men, Madison Avenue. But now it's all of that's just gone up a notch or six with the advent of social media and with the way these are controlled by corporations, and those corporations were savvy enough to realise that data was power and money and wealth, and that it could be interrogated. And of course artificial intelligence algorithms, which are coming on apace, are absolutely ideal for plundering this material. Anyway, one of the phenomena, of course, is the meme on the social medium, which is one of those cards with some sort of cute saying on it. And so there's actually like a meme wars. Rather than people like putting papers together and deeply considering the arguments and gathering statistics and doing research, we've got who can kind of produce the most effective meme for persuading the public to do this, that or the other, for hypnotising the public into doing this, that or the other. Well, that's what a meme is. Of course, it's a word. The word meme comes from Richard Dawkins' book, I think, called Genes and Memes. And there certainly is a paper called that, because I remember we used to make the third year philosophy of mind students read it. So I'm sort of a bit familiar with it. And Dawkins' idea was that the world of symbols and ideas behaves a bit like an ecosphere, and that the creatures in it are ideas. Liberalism, monetarism, communism, Christianity, deism, monism, modified monism, yoga, samkhya, etc. That those ideas are in this pool, this ecosphere of a pool, and they fight it out, just like creatures fight it out, just like species fight it out, in a survival of the fittest battle. And the ideas that reign produce culture, and culture is at least partly productive of action, of the things we do, mode of production in Marxist terms, the things we do, agriculture, building cities, producing cultures of poetry and art and painting and architecture, producing armies, parliaments and institutions. Now I'm not going to say that whole development of human history is purely ideal. It's purely a matter of the ideas in circulation. But I'm not going to say either that it's purely a matter of changes that take place on the material plane amongst, in the means of production or whatever. These things are obviously deeply interlocked. They're not even two things. They are the process, two aspects of the process of change and development and flux and movement, which is what the universe is doing at the moment. So these memes, this battle of the memes, is one of the material causes. It's material because it relies in its current articulation on the internet. and on, well, and on more generally on media. And there's something that happens to this survival of the fittest type evolutionary scenario in the meme wars, which is now very much faster than it's ever been, and getting faster, and in which there is much more knowledge of how to manipulate people than there ever has been, and getting more scientific, more acute, and the predictability of human behaviour under these stress conditions is becoming more and more enhanced. So that's something that I think is a little bit unique about now. We have an age-old material force, meme wars, the battle of ideas, the struggle of ideas. Not the clash of civilization, the struggle of ideas. But now we have this, it's gone into a fresh gear through the simply through the acceleration of exchange that a modern technology, information technology, has brought about. But I mean, there are more concrete material causes operating here, or material factors, because you have to be careful with the word cause, you know, so everything has been a little bit, cause is also an effect, and the cause producing an effect is then re-affected itself by the effect that it produced, and so on, you know, kind of a will to power metaphysics going on here for me, you know, that everything is this Heraclitean dance of all things. But right down at the level of soil, of air, of chlorophyll, of hemoglobin, of water, of fire, of ether, we see already the impacts of the damage done to the ecosphere by human activity, and how it's reaching a pitch that all but the craziest and unscientific of people are now pretty cognizant of. The obvious one, of course, is global warming, but there's all kinds of other stuff going on. Soil depletion. No soil, no crops, no people. Pollution of the oceans. Of course, fish produce a large part of the human diet. Plus, the ocean has got key functions in the preservation, purification, and recycling of the atmosphere. So we've got a whole lot of stuff going on that front, and I think its consequences are rippling out. Somebody called Christian Pieretti wrote a book called The Tropic of Chaos, I believe. I haven't read it, but the central thesis intrigues me, and I will try and check it out and form a bit of an idea on it, and weigh it up, as it were. The central thesis seems to be that the effects of global warming are upon us, and he cites the case of Tahrir Square, the Egyptian articulation of the Arab Spring, was starting out as a bread riot. So the price of bread went up. You know, and Egypt's not a terribly rich country. There are people for which a small increase in the price of bread is kind of catastrophic to their ability to manage financially. And the whole thing sprung out of bread riots, but there were bread riots because of poor crops due to an effect of global warming. Now, whether that was flooding or excessive drought or whatever it was, but there was an increase in the price of wheat as a result of some poor crops, as a result of some funny weather. Now, obviously, you know, the I don't know how easy it would be to kind of really substantiate that chain of claims. Probably not that easy, I would be thinking, you know, without some kind of difficult to answer objections being raised. But the point that I would take from it is that this is, if that is not what is actually happening now, it's something like that that will happen. We won't just see the seas rising somewhere and there being refugees, and it's all kind of managed very efficiently by the United Nations because they were expecting it. No, it'll be chaos. You know, we've already seen what huge movements of populations cause. All kinds of nasty beasts jump out of the woodwork when there's too much of that. And of course, it's huge population movements, often the result of war, but also famine and flooding and so forth. And what would you do? What would anybody do? If your neighbour's house gets shelled, and then the one on the other side gets shelled the other day, and everybody's killed, you kind of pack your bags and you go. Of course you do. So, but nevertheless, the global infrastructure is shaking. I'll keep saying this again and again and again. It's shaking on all fronts. And they've got huge movements of population from one area to another, particularly if it's to a crowded, already crowded area, you get problems. Of course you do. You know, the infrastructure won't take it. It's too shaky, and people get upset. When the people feel insecure, they behave irrationally and violently, which is just a brute fact. You can start a lot of this conversation out from that brute fact. So, yep. So I see, this fragmentation, obviously with myriad causes, but they're sort of traceable. They're not occult. I just really want to emphasise that, because you're doing some of the commentary, get a feeling of it's just the unfolding of the zeitgeist, or it's something twitching in the collective unconscious. Yeah. But certainly the ideas part is very important. I know, before I came out, I was watching yet another interpretation of the Charlottesville events, and just thinking how the whole thing is only possible because people are living in a symbolic bubble. You know, it seems to jump out of the fact that the symbols are actually imbued with life or death meaning, instead of being seen for what they are. Symbols is just something standing in for something else. And there's no need to cut anybody's throat because of it. Because at the end of the day, right down at that raw level, again, symbols are neither in nor there, are they? Now, as I said, both of these imaginary factions built upon this arbitrary binary do have their intellectual prize fighters, and I listened to what they say as well. I was listening to one of the outright guys actually talking about Heidegger's notebooks, and then under the black notebooks, in which Heidegger bewails cosmopolitanism and says cosmopolitanism or humanism as being the cause of all the world's ills, because it produced rootless people, and rootless people don't have care for the world because they don't have any roots in a place, in a locality, in a soil, in a nation, in a community, whatever. And this was the nature of Heidegger's anti-Semitism, I think, because he said, well, the Jews were the ultimate cosmopolitan peoples. no stake in the place. Yeah. And actually some kind of left leaning ecologists have taken up this very idea, you know, the rootlessness. On the part of influential and powerful people, it results in all the threats to the biosphere that I've been speaking about. It's a bit like having no stake, and you need to have a stake in a concrete locality. Now, Heidegger explains this in terms of his notion of the human being as Dasein, being there. I mean, Dasein is a counter idea of the human being, over and against Descartes, who sees like an atomic subject. It's just like this single thing. And Heidegger's Dasein, of course, it extends into the immediate environment. It seems to me that alt-right ideologues using this idea, and Heidegger himself perhaps, are not realising there isn't an intrinsic limit to the extent of one's sympathies. So the egalitarianism of the left isn't actually, it's a fantasy, but it's not one that has an impossibility grounded in the world or in existence. And I suppose, you know, this is a big philosophical question. How far can we extend our sympathies? And of course, the outright people are saying not very far. Be unashamedly a member of our tribe. Do not be a cosmopolitan and groundless and soilless person. And I think the argument, the philosophical argument, of course, which isn't going to intervene very much in what's actually going on, but nevertheless, which will linger around for some centuries, is this one of how far can we extend our sympathies? Is it desirable to extend them? And is cosmopolitanism correctly characterised as groundlessness or rootlessness? So that is a big question, and I think investigations which try and take a wide sweep, which suffer from the old man's voice of big picture thinking, are likely to head towards this question: how far do my sympathies go? Should they go further than they do, and can they? Why do some people argue against the idea? What's their train of thinking? So, that's where I'm up to with that. It is kind of scary. At the same time, millions of people on the planet are going about their business in a reasonably peaceful fashion. Well, hardly anywhere under ideal conditions, particularly politically and economically. But it just seems as though things are turning very rapidly on all fronts at the moment. So, fragmentation. The unknown economy collapses, people retreat into smaller self-help units. Over time, tribal differences develop, and these in time become the basis for violence and struggle. Or Zizek's scenario, the rich retreat into bubbles where clean water, clean air and all the rest of it, and hydroponic gardens and blah blah, they all retreat into that, which guarded, of course, and the rest outside struggle in a desert of the real or in a pile of ruins to subsist in a Mad Max scenario of gangs and violence and scrambling to stay alive. Or so the economy collapses, smaller local economies coalesce and do quite well. Technology survives, certain infrastructure survives, the breakdown is such that infrastructure survives. And then these communities re-coalesce into global networks. And through blockchain technology, there's no reason why this couldn't be done. As long as the infrastructure survives. Of course, if the infrastructure doesn't survive, you have definitely got Zizek scenario, I think. And I can't see how the fragmentation can't happen, given that it's occurring on all of the interlocked layers in the machinery, whatever you want to call it. I don't want to call it machinery because it sounds like a mechanistic conception, but you know, there's a lot of interacting plays going on. But particularly on the big ones, you know, finance, money, trade, exchange, and all of the politics that go around that, corporatism and so on. Very unstable. Just been reading Yanis Varoufakis' account of his time as the Greek finance minister and how all that panned out. And it's good insight into how the money systems are completely fucked. But I say the culture layer, you know, there's this chaotic meme war, or several meme wars, but they do kind of come down to a lack of clarity around sympathy and empathy and human relating. For a certain type of philosopher, they do. You know, I'm not saying that they can't lose any sort of ontological priority or magical power of exertion or anything like that. But, you know, of great interest, and that's a tremendous instability. Tremendous instability that does, you know, that can pan out into violence, extreme violence, war. And, you know, there's been loads of cyber rattling lately. The obvious things, North Korea and Trump, but also cyber rattling some months ago across the Kashmir border. India versus Pakistan, both nuclear states, with shots fired and injuries. I'm not sure about deaths, but you know, this is dangerous stuff. And Kashmir is still this running sore since partition. China and India again, scuffles on the border. So, instability, and of course the ecological thing. Of course, what does Trump do? He welches on the Paris Climate Agreement, which was inadequate anyway, but better than nothing. So the fragmentation isn't going to stop it, I don't think. But what is feasible is that a safety net is in place. There are already alternative networks are in place, so it's not like it's maybe jumping off the cliff but landing in a bouncy net, you know. And there's work to be done there, I think. Just preemptive work. And I do feel that we have got some good politicians who are trying to give it their best shot and do have a sense of the depth of the mess that we're in. But mostly they don't. They seem to be too dim. To be honest, whether that the forces that can counter the deleterious effects of the fragmentation can marshal themselves a bit better. I think it will go up high, and there'll be many casualties. Anyway, I'm almost at town, and thanks for listening. It's a bit rough, this one. But I hope you can glean something from it. Over and out.